It's The Record on KUOW with Marcy Silman. I'm Ross Reynolds. You may know Gary Steingart for his novels, including Absurdistan and Super Sad True Love Story. His latest work is a memoir about growing up in the Soviet Union, moving to the U.S. as a child, and becoming a novelist. It's called Little Failure, and Gary Steingart joins us. Thank you so much for stopping by.
Great to be in the city that still reads, Seattle, yeah.
We do. We read a lot.
Yeah.
Your mother called you Little Failure. Your father called you Snotty. And as you tell it, he also hit you as a kid. Just knowing those bare facts, one might think that you had had horrible parents, but that's not the whole truth, is it?
No. There were lovely people who just named me Little Failure and Snotty and occasionally gave me a little wallop across the ears. But, you know, they're from a very different culture. They're from a very Soviet culture where calling your kid snotty is a nice thing. It was a way for him to sort of build a bond with me and my phlegm nature, you know.
It was tough for you as a kid, the challenge of coming from Leningrad to the U.S. You spoke with an accent. You say kids called you the red gerbil.
Yeah, those were the days of all those movies, Red Dawn, Red Hamster, Red Gerbil, Ronald Reagan had made that the Evil Empire speech. So it was a Hebrew school I went to, but being a Russian was so bad in 1980 that I had to pretend to the kids that I was born in East Berlin. I was telling Jewish kids that I was a German to make myself look good, and that's how bad it got.
How did you get to the United States? I think you called it the Wheat Russians, the ones who...
The Grain Jews.
The Grain Jews.
The Wheat Russians sounds good, too. That sounds like a drink I'll be having tonight. Jimmy Carter and Leonid Brezhnev made a deal. Russia desperately needed grain to run because of a bad harvest. America needed Jews to run, you know. So there was a wonderful exchange of grain for Jews. So I was exchanged for about 300 loaves of bread and a croissant. And I don't know who got the better deal out of it, you know.
Memorable moments in the life of Gary Steingart. Well, first of all, becoming Gary, you were born Igor.
Yeah, Igor is a wonderful name, except it happened to be Frankenstein's assistant. So when we got to this country, I had enough problems already being the red gerbil that we decided to switch the letters around. We got Gory. Gory didn't sound so hot, so we switched the O to an A, and Gary was born.
Another great moment in your early life, being asked to read your story, The Challenge, with one L, in grade school. You got to read that out loud to your class, and it's very moving the way you talk about what that did for you.
Yeah, I mean, this was the first time I was, I think, acknowledged as a human being among the other kids because, you know, I didn't have any, I spoke with an accent, I wore a gigantic fur hat and a giant fur coat made out of some woodland animal in Leningrad. And then I wrote my first book when I was 11, my first book in English, and the kids loved it. And then I wrote a satire of the Torah called the Gonora with chapters like Sexodus instead of Exodus. And the kids loved me even more. So this very pathetic, you know, must write to be liked thing was born and continued for four books now.
Another important moment was when you lost your Russian accent. That didn't happen overnight, though, did it?
No, it did not. It took practice, I tell you.
How did that make people see you differently?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I think that nowadays being an immigrant is not the same thing as it was back then. I think we are even more so, at least in the coastal communities, I'm sure Seattle, but definitely New York and other places, we're surrounded by immigrants. And most of the kids in the schools around us come from, you know, from different cultures. So it's a little different now. I mean, I remember when I went to Stuyvesant High School, which is a math and science high school in New York, where over half the population was Asian. And I remember these Chinese kids hiding in the bathroom because their mothers had made them these delicious squid snacks and eating it in the bathroom so nobody would see. But nowadays, those squid snacks go for $78 in Tribeca, you know. And there's something to be proud of. So there's been, I think, a huge change in the way immigrants are perceived. And I just came the wrong time. I mean, I wish I could come now.
We read about your first work written as a child in Leningrad called Lenin and His Magical Goose, which you immodestly call a masterwork of socialist realist literature. You think it holds up?
I think it will hold up. I mean, we don't have a copy, but it was beautiful. It was about 100 pages long. It was written at the bequest of my grandmother, who paid one piece of cheese for each page. I love cheese. Random House still pays me in cheese. And, you know, it was about Lenin meeting this magical goose, who talking goose, and invading Finland together to create a socialist revolution. And then in the end, we find out that the goose is Menshevik. Lenin, being a Bolshevik, eats the goose. I remember my grandmother saying, maybe he doesn't eat the goose. He just exiles the goose to Mexico. Things happen to him there. We won't talk about it. Ice pick.
I'm talking to Gary Steingart. His new book is a memoir. It's called Little Failure. Have you seen that new film, Nebraska, with Bruce Dern?
I was shocked, yes, because something exactly the same happened.
Exactly the same. If you haven't seen the film, he's an old man who thinks he's won a $1 million prize and has to go to Nebraska to claim it. And not long after you came to the U.S., your parents got the publisher's clearinghouse letter promising them $10 million.
Yeah. Look, at least our excuse was we were immigrants. What does this guy have? I mean, how does he not know that, you know, he's American? Jeez, come on. Yeah, it was really something. I mean, for a couple of days, we thought that we were multi-millionaires. I was planning to buy a yacht. I was planning to go to a place where they didn't have Hebrew schools, where I'd be called the Red Gerbil, maybe Miami. You know, we're looking all over the map. I was so happy. And then, of course, they told us that my parents' workplaces, that everyone gets those letters. And we were crushed. We had already ordered the 5 magazines that you're supposed to order to be in the winner's circle or whatever it's called.
But that was a good part, right? Because you subscribed to a science fiction magazine?
Yeah. It was called Isaac Asimov Science Fiction Magazine. I think it still exists. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it exists.
Yeah.
And it was wonderful. I mean, all these wonderful nerdish science fiction tales like Olivia Butler and, oh my God, I just – that was a huge inspiration.
Another hallmark day in your life was, I think it was your first day of high school. After high school, you went to Central Park Sheep Meadow and you played Ultimate Frisbee. And you call that, at that moment, you said a connection in the past broke. What happened?
Well, I think that, you know, I grew up, first of all, with a very tight-knit Soviet family, which was wonderful in many ways and restrictive in others. Then I went to a Hebrew school that was also nice to meet my fellow Jews, but it was also very parochial, as a parochial school will be. For the longest time growing up in Queens, I thought that the 3 buildings on Queens Boulevard, the 3 skyscrapers, that was Manhattan. I had no clue that a giant city existed just beyond the horizons of Queens. And all of a sudden, there I was surrounded by people of all races and creeds. And, you know, it was just amazing. We were taught growing up that, you know, you go to Manhattan, you're going to be mugged and heroined. We didn't know what – we would smoke the heroin cigarettes or snort the marijuana. I mean, you had to do things like that because that's what they did, those crazy Gentiles in Manhattan. And then I got there, and it was this wonderful heavenly experience. And I think, you know, that really is the story of this book. It's this very 20th century journey from one place to another, from one failed empire to another sort of failing empire, you know. And it's this feeling. I mean, when I go to China, they don't like me to. They don't want me to even touch that country because every superpower I land in just self destructs after a while.
Well, it's also a story of how Gary Steingart went from working on George Bush the first's reelection campaign to now being, as you say, as leftist as can be. What happened?
Well, yeah. Well, what happened was I went to the Herbert Walker Bush victory party wearing my finest immigrant polyester suit. That you could get static just by looking at it. And I showed up thinking, my God, today I'm going to meet a beautiful, beautiful Republican girl who's going to take me home and to her father, and maybe we'll, you know, throw the pigskin around with Jack Kemp or something like that. But the moment I got there, these 2 lovely girls did walk over, but they mistook me for the waiter.
Oh.
And that was I mean, if not for that, I'd probably be in the Tea Party by now instead of, you know, here in Seattle.
Crushing. You were right around there that the racism inside you died. What happened there?
We grew up, as many immigrant groups do. You would think that immigrant groups have a greater appreciation for suffering from, you know, the slings of others. But on the other hand, there was a lot of racism around me in the community in which I grew up. A lot of fear of blacks and Hispanics, you know, and this is sort of, and growing up in the Soviet Union, there were no Hispanics, and there were very few, you know, very few African exchange students. But it was a very insular community, and it was very racist in many ways. And growing out of that required really just being removed from it, and spending time in Manhattan, and then at Oberlin College, where of course, yeah.
Yes, you went to Oberlin College. And where you were known as Scary Gary.
Scary Gary. Well, at that point in my life, I discovered that marijuana was, you know, I smoked marijuana the way, you know, the way people at the Stranger magazine smoke marijuana quite a bit. And to be labeled with the moniker Scary Gary at Oberlin requires a very special amount, a very prodigious use of marijuana. And this is before it was even legalized like it is here, uh-huh. You know, in Ohio.
It was Scary Gary, ha, ha, ha. It wasn't, oh, no, Scary Gary's coming head for the hills, was it?
No, it was like, oh, my God, this party's getting started. Even Scary Gary is here.
Okay, post-college, early 1990s, you're back in Manhattan. You're writing, and you made the acquaintance of a television writer who you call the benefactor, who is a weird combination of a mentor and kind of a punching bag in some ways. What was that relationship like?
You know, one thing that as I was writing this book, I realized that, you know, that there are no heroes in this book. I mean, everyone, I hope, is nuanced. And that includes myself. I was a jerk, you know, and anybody who wanted to do something good for me, I would lash out against. And this was just – and this man really – I was starting my first book at this point, The Russian Debutante's Handbook. I was out of college. And he took me under his wing. But that just made me angry that somebody would actually care for me so much as to say, you know, maybe you should stop smoking pot all day long and drinking the rest of the night away, and maybe you should go back and work on your novel some more, which isn't perfect. You still need more work. So I became very angry and I started to lash out at him.
Why did he put up with you? As you describe it, you treat him pretty terribly.
Some people are just masochistic. I don't know. But so many years later, so many decades later, and he's still one of my best friends, and he was mm-hmm. the witness at my wedding. So, and one thing he said was, look, if we're going to continue being friends, you have to go into psychoanalysis, which I did. And yeah. as many other Jewish New Yorkers would, I joined the long line for yeah. the couch, and there I was.
And I want to talk about your days on the couch, but I also want to talk about a part where I had to pick up the book and went, this is a memoir, right? He made a documentary film about you. This is before your first novel came out, about you and your friends.
Yes.
What was the point there?
It was called Only Children, and he's an only child himself. Yeah. So it was really messed up Only Children. So it was me, my college roommate, who was, pretty messed up, and then this dominatrix, this sort of 19-year-old dominatrix who had these horrible ulcers and stuff. So quite a winning team we were. Yeah.
Can I see it on Netflix?
Luckily, it was never made.
Let's
hope the footage has burned by now. Yeah.
Okay, another signal moment, meeting the novelist Chang Ray Lee. What kind of influence did he have on you and your writing?
I was a huge fan of Chang Ray Lee, the Korean-American author who's written Native Speaker. That was the book that was out then. And I thought, my God, somebody can write about the immigrant experience and not just have it be this sort of glorified, we came, we saw, we conquered. It had a lot of what Chang Ray himself called blood and guts, and that's what he encouraged in my work. And I applied to the program at Hunter College, the MFA, Masters of Fine Arts program, thinking, maybe Chang Ray will let me into the program. But he called me into his office and said, I can get you a book deal right now. And a couple of weeks later, we had a book deal, So it was this
That must have been so amazing. I mean, you worked on it for years by that time, right?
I did. And, you grow up being called little failure. The last thing you expect is any kind of success. So it absolutely floored me.
You were drinking too much at the time, and as you just alluded to a little bit earlier, you began to make dates with reality, which were the meetings yes. with your analyst. How did that help you?
Well, I came with the assumption that I was a bad son, a bad boyfriend, and more importantly, a bad writer. That was sort of ingrained in me, even though at Oberlin I had won awards for the beginning of my first novel. But the feeling of being a nothing, of being the red gerbil still and the failure and the snotty, it just continued in many ways. It was very hard to move beyond that. But what happens in psychoanalysis is not much. You lie there and you say these things, yeah. and they're sort of published into the air. The analyst sits behind you. This was before iPhones. Now they're probably iPhoning away. I'm kidding about that. But just saying those things out loud and seeing them sort of hang in the air. And then I thought, what if it's not true? Mm. And that inspired me to apply to the program with Chang Ray Lee, which then led to the beginning of my writing career.
Your parents were not that supportive sometimes. You relate sometimes so their reactions to your books were pretty weird.
Well, they were, they wanted me to be a lawyer, as many immigrant parents yeah. do. My mother was very emphatic about that. In fact, the little failure moniker came because I graduated from Oberlin and the expectation was that I would go to law school, and I didn't. So that's when the failure thing was born. But, I tried as hard as I could to both please them. I got a job as a paralegal while at the same time going home and writing and writing and writing and writing. And I think now they're absolutely proud that I was able to do what I'm doing now.
Well, at the end of Little Failure, you described this extraordinary trip you took back to Leningrad with your parents that you'd returned often, they never had, and it sounded like it was an amazing experience. But have they read Little Failure, and have they reviewed this for you?
No, they haven't read it.
Really?
I sent to them. I haven't heard back from them. So, mm-hmm.
Are you trepidatious? Are you concerned about what the reaction might be?
Well,
because before it was like thinly veiled as a character in a novel,
right.
And now it's them.
It's also in English, and their English isn't perfect, so I think some of the nuances may be lost. The other books have been translated into Russian, so I think the real review would come when the book is hopefully translated into Russian someday. Mm-hmm. Then I'll really never hear the end of it.
Gary Steingart, it's a terrific book. It's called Little Failure, and the pictures alone worth the price of admission. Check it out, Gary Steingart, as a child. Thank you so much for stopping by.
Thanks.
We really
Great
appreciate
to be
it.
Here. Thank you.
This is The Record on KUOW.